The following is a presentation of the First United Methodist Church of Pittsfield, Massachusetts. We are a caring and inclusive church, seeking to know Christ and share grace with our community. We worship at 10:30 on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary at 55 Fenn Street in Pittsfield, and on our website at fumcpittsfield.org. We hope that you are blessed as you listen to this message.
So the Christmas Carol, Dickens' Christmas Carol, is written in what Dickens called staves. Sort of, you know, because it's a carol in his way, it's a Christmas carol, so they're written in verses. what we have today is what happens after the third stave, the third verse, which is where the ghost of Christmas present comes and takes Scrooge out into the world and shows him what's going on right now in the world in which he lives. The ghost of Christmas presents is a giant figure clad in green with a booming voice, surrounded by a feast when Scrooge first meets him. But then things change as their journey begins. And so we begin today with Scrooge waking up after being returned by the ghost of Christmas present.
Ugh, how dreadful was that? My goodness, to be awoken at the stroke of one, only to find my sitting room inhabited by this giant of a ghost, surrounded by a food, a feast, the grandest feast you could ever have, and this booming voice calling, come, come in, and know me better. I had no desire to know him at all, and yet I went. Hearty and hale, he looked, this giant of a ghost, clad in green, seated upon a grand throne, surrounded by a feast. And yet, the feast was not for me. No sooner did I reach out to touch his robe than we were gone from that place and wandering the streets of London. All was gray. It was meager and cold. The weather gave no hint of glee. The mists rose. The combination of the damp air and the soot from the chimneys raining down among us. The poor people trying to keep warm on this cold December night. Bah! They can do better. And yet the street was not deserted. And cold and dingy though the world may have felt, there seemed to be, I don't know, strange cheerfulness among the people, an emotion I barely recognized myself. There seemed to be hope. Could it have been hope? Even in the hopelessness of their dull, gray lives. People out shoveling snow and soot, emptying chamber pots into the gutters, busying themselves to get their days and their lives in gear in the morning, calling out to one another, even in the midst of their labor, of their hopelessness, calling out to one another in joviality, in outright glee, if you can believe it, sharing an excitement that their poor estates could hardly have credited, certainly never earned. And then next, even in young Cratchit's house, the family, large family, gathered around a table, around the tiniest little goose you ever saw. It was no bigger than my lunch. And yet didn't Bob Cratchit say, has there ever been such a goose as this? I was looking at it thinking, is there more? Joy at the Cratchit's? Bah, humbug, joy? At the Cratchits, where their household income is 15 shillings a week, and the Christmas feast is my lunch, the leftover parts of which I've already tossed in the bin. It doesn't make any sense. Where's the sense in this? Where's the logic? Where's the reason? Bah, bah! ghost of Christmas present, yet another meddling spirit from a realm so far removed from our reality that its understanding of what it means to shuffle along this mortal coil must necessarily be both warped and so altered from truth as to be entirely unheedable. Bah, get away from me, you spirits. Get away from me, you ghosts. You have nothing to do with me. You have nothing to do with this world. You are shadows only, warped by the Christmas sun, casting a shape on the ground that you invite us to recognize as familiar, as real. And though the shape itself is both amorphous and vague, I will not be changed. But I hear that young voice, that tiny voice. Young Tim, crippled, hobbled, suffering in pain, and yet celebrating a joy he has no earthly reason to feel. God bless us, everyone. How, my child, has God blessed you? When you will die and bring so much grief to your family that you claim to love, that you would rather have never been born in the first place, how has God blessed you? On and on. And finally, now at my nephew's own party, the ghost of Christmas present leads me in there and I watch their frivolity. Ha, bah, their futility. What matters any of this in a world as harsh and unforgiving as ours? Only the strong survive. Only the ruthless survive. Only those willing to do what others are not. There is no mercy for the weak. There is no compassion for the suffering or the poor. There is no mercy. So why then do you show me these things, spirits, if they only confirm that which I already know? Did not the spirit himself show me? Over the course of our journey in the night, did he not progress from young and hale and strong to old and withered and dying in front of my very eyes? Was he not prepared to die in that very hour? And under his robes, did he not show me his companions, want and ignorance, starving brats, following him everywhere he went? They are his constant companions, and sure it is so, because the poor are here always with us. Even the carpenter's son, if you remember, beset by those who would take his common comforts to give but a pittance of the poor they could never save. Even the carpenter's son said, "You will always have the poor with you, but you won't always have me." They are ever with us, this crowd of seekers, taking from us what they haven't earned, but what we have. And what are we to do about it? Cast them out? Send them to workhouses or prisons? Those establishments exist for support and rehabilitation. Those are not my responsibility. They are not my task. If I give to them out of my pocket, they will squander what they haven't earned and they will learn nothing. Bah. Humbug. And yet, don't I hear that old rector's voice again calling out to me across the years and the miles? There was a story I recall, one I remember. There was a man, a rich man, a hard worker, a good provider. In short, an admirable man. And the man had sons, and one of his sons was also a worker, a provider, admirable, a good man in society. But the other, a wastrel, a peasant, a drain on the finances and the patience of all those in whose lives he moved. The other son asked for his father to give him his inheritance before he died so that he might go and live life as he chose. The father, though it must have been hard to watch so much of his wealth walk away, knowing he would never see it again, did the prudent thing, did the wise thing. He paid the child off and sent him away, removing him and his wasteful ways from their community. And of course, the son went off and squandered it all. And this, I assure you, I find no surprise. And to this point, I say, huzzah, the father acted prudently, removing the bad influence from his life and household, lest it compromise his other child, the worthy one, the one who would one day carry on the business and the legacy by running the farm. But then I recall the story. It turns strange, and I cannot fathom it. Because the son, the one who squandered everything, then decided, I have nothing left. I have no recourse. I will go back to my father. I have no friends. I have no money. I have no place. But once I had everything, and so I will return. Though I've spent it all, though I've squandered it all, let me now go back home and see what happens. See if there is a home for me. And he went home. And the father, who until then had been prudent and wise and thoughtful, must have slipped somehow, because when this child of his, the one who'd taken part of his wealth and gone off into the world to waste it, to spend it, to squander it, when this child of his came back within sight, the father ran to meet him and hold him in his arms. Not only did he welcome him home, he welcomed him back into his household, into his love. Not only did he welcome him home, but the father said to his servants, quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Fetch the fatted calf and slaughter it. We must celebrate with feasting, because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Who does that? Who welcomes the one who's wasted all of that wealth after they've been gone? Who welcomes them back into the home? Who forgives that? And what is even the point? If the poor remain poor, what is the point if they don't climb out of poverty? What is the point of charity if it's only a crutch? And yet, my mind goes back once again to that boy, the Cratchit boy, young Tim. He too had a crutch. And yet it seems to me that the crutch he bore did not limit him. Rather, his crutch, opened the world to him, a world in which he could play and even run after his fashion, a world which he could explore, and even a world in which he could find hope. There will always be poor, certainly there will, and this ghost with his children of ignorance and want that follow him all the way around showed me that the plight of the poor is not the province of the past or the dread of the future, but the reality of today. Where there will always be poor? Certainly. And so our question maybe is, how do we respond to that knowledge? How does God call us to respond? This God whose heart seems to be for the poor and the downtrodden and the marginalized. Poor persons will never disappear from the earth. That's why I'm giving you this command. You must open your hand generously to your fellow Israelites, to the needy among you, and to the poor who live with you in your land. This old, withered heart, is it starting to beat again? And yes, maybe there is blood pumping through this old muscle after all. Maybe there always has been, or maybe it's just starting to flow once again, but I feel it. Either way, I feel it. The blood, the warmth, maybe even compassion. Love? Dare I hope? For love? That would truly be the greatest gift of all. I think of those scenes that the ghost showed me. As I watched, in my mind, all I thought of was, where is the wealth in this story? How could the poor out on the streets in the morning preparing for the day do so with such joviality when they had no wealth? How could the Cratchits share happiness and joy themselves when they barely have enough to get by? Even my nephew Fred, when I looked in their party and saw their frivolity, and I recognized it because they were walled off from the world of the poor, keeping their own company in the comfort of, well, of their comfort. But those out sweeping and shoveling weren't jovial because they were sweeping and shoveling. Their joviality lay in each other's company. And Cratchit, he wasn't happy and joyful because of his small goose and meager fare, but because of the love that surrounded him, the love of family that celebrated this meal together. Even Fred, his happiness and that of his guests wasn't because they were isolated from want, but because they were together, close-knit, sharing love and community. Maybe it's not about wealth at all. Maybe it's about community. Perhaps community, being welcomed into community, even when there is no earthly reason for that welcome. Perhaps that is the greatest gift. The father, the one who welcomed back his son, the story never really tells us whether his son entered once again into an inheritance. It tells us only that he was reunited in his father's love. And that was enough. We don't know anything about his wealth, this wealth, what kind of wealth that lives in the cash box. We don't know what that son encountered. But what we do know is that he found the wealth of love. And it is that wealth, I think, that the carpenter's son calls us to both pursue and to share. That is the greatest of gifts. The wealth that we find in each other. Sharing love, sharing generosity, sharing compassion and mercy. Outpouring God's grace from our hearts into the lives of others. The wealth of community. The wealth of love.
Good morning. From Matthew 26, 11, you always have the poor with you, but you won't always have me. From Deuteronomy 15, verse 11, poor persons will never disappear from the earth. That's why I'm giving you this command. You must open your hand generously to your fellow Israelites, to the needy among you, and to the poor who live with you in your land. From Luke 15, verses 11 through 32, Jesus said, a certain man had two sons. The younger son said to his father, give me my share of the inheritance. Then the father divided his estate between them. Soon afterward, the younger son gathered everything together and took a trip to a land far away. There, he wasted his wealth through extravagant living. When he had used up his resources, a severe food shortage arose in that country, and he began to be in need. He hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. He longed to eat his fill from what the pigs ate, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have more than enough food, but I'm starving to death? I will get up and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Take me on as one of your hired hands. So he got up and went to his father. While he was still a long ways off, his father saw him and was moved with compassion. His father ran to him, hugged him, and kissed him. Then his son said, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, quickly, bring out the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Fetch the fatted calf and slaughter it. We must celebrate with feasting because this son of mine was dead and has come back to life. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field. Coming in from the field, he approached the house and heard music and dancing. He called to one of the servants and asked, "What was going on?" The servant replied, "Your brother has arrived, and your father has slaughtered the fatted calf because he received his son back safe and sound." Then the older son was furious and didn't want to enter in, but his father came out and begged him. He answered his father, "Look, I've served you all these years, and I never disobeyed your instructions. Yet you've never given me as much as a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours returned after gobbling up your estate on prostitutes, you slaughtered a fatted calf for him." Then his father said, "Son, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found."
This has been a presentation of the First United Methodist Church of Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening, and God bless.